Thank you, Tom. In 1973, my good friend and mentor, Homer Anderson, sent letters to the mayors in every city in Kansas and Missouri offering to hold mayor's prayer breakfast in each city. He received a number of positive responses, with Joplin, Missouri, mayor's prayer breakfast being the first. The next year, Overland Park joined the group, and this is our 38th annual event. For the next 25 years, Homer managed about a dozen mayor's prayer breakfasts each year, eventually handing them off to local groups. When Homer died in May of 2000, my pastor and put his hand on my shoulder and he said, looks like the mantle has fallen on you. He, of course, was referring to the Old Testament story of Elijah and Elisha, where Elijah was taken up into heaven and his mantle, or coat, or cloak, whatever it was, fell on Elisha, indicating that Elisha was to continue Elijah's mission. The next year, I opened Homer's Coffee House as a tribute to Homer and assumed his role on the Overland Park Mayor's Prayer Breakfast Committee. For the past 13 years, I've had the privilege of inviting my friends and acquaintances to come and share their story with you. And this year is no exception. I'm privileged to introduce Pat McCowan. Pat is the CEO and founder of McCowan Gordon Construction Company, one of the largest commercial construction companies in Kansas City. It's hard to drive down the street and not see a McCowan Gordon trailer sitting out in front of one of the newest and best buildings in the town. McCowan Gordon has been selected as one of the best places to work 8 years in a row by the Kansas City Business Journal. Pat is involved with many, many civic groups, as you can see in your program, is a major contributor to the quality of life we all enjoy here. To me, the real heroes of this country are the men and women who start and grow businesses, making and building things, and providing employment for lots of hardworking people. And with that, I'm proud to introduce my friend, Pat McCowan.
Well, thank you. I owe an apology to you for drinking Starbucks instead of a Homer's coffee. I'm honored to be here. I'm humbled to be here today. I just really appreciate the opportunity to come and share a few thoughts and maybe encouragement for all of you. You know, when Jim first asked me, he said, "Pat, he goes, we'd like for you to come and share a little bit." And I said, "Okay." And I said, "What would you like for me to share?" He goes, "Well, just share a little bit about your life." I said, "Jim, my life isn't that interesting. It's a pretty boring life. And drink down that coffee. I think you'll find out that that's the truth." I also went back and I started looking at a number of other people that had been in this at this occasion and had an opportunity to speak and share a little bit of their life. And you know, I noticed that there were a number of NFL players and Major League Baseball and basketball players. And, I looked at all that and I just said, "Hey, Jim," I said, "you know, the only thing I have in common with those guys is they beat me up when I was in grade school and high school." So anyway, I think that's it. But actually, you know, I did letter in high school in music. I mean, come on, are you kidding me? Imagine how well that was received by the football squad, you know. So, you know, they, instead of giving a letter jacket, they gave us letter vest, and so to wear around. So, anyway, but it's the truth. I actually did letter in music, and I know it's kind of weird. Most people probably didn't even know that they gave letters for music, but they do. Before I go on, I just want to introduce a few people in my life that are here today that are really special. And one of those people is my wife, and that's Beth. And so stand up, Beth, if you would. Thank you. Yeah, so she's the love of my life. We've been married about 40 years, not about 40 years, a little over 40 years now. And so, in fact, they have laws against how early we got married. Now they do. So anyway, just great. The other person that that has obviously had a big impact on my life is my mom. And she's here today. She's 88 years old. So if you don't like anything that you hear today, blame her. So is what I would say. So, and then my sister's here actually somewhere. I don't know. Peggy, are you here?
That's straight back.
Straight back. Oh, there she is. So my sister's here as well. My only sister. So thank you. Yeah. So. And then I have a number of colleagues and a really special colleague, and that's my partner, Brett Gordon, and a number of colleagues from Macomb Gordon. So thanks, partner. Appreciate you being here. So, you know, I think like most of you, I was born at a very early age. was circumcised right after that, and then for about a year, I couldn't walk. Many of you may or may not know this, but I was actually born in St. Louis. And are there anybody here that was from St. Louis? Did anybody go to, really? Okay, where'd you go to high school?
Ledoux.
Okay, and how?
Clayton.
I think our a cappella scene group beat you guys. And yeah, so. So I went to Rittner High School, which was a huge high school at the time. It's you know, it's probably pretty small by now, but one of the great things about being born in St. Louis and raised in St. Louis is some of you may remember this, is that Pope John Paul actually visited St. Louis. I don't know, and this is really true. He really did visit St. Louis. He visited St. Louis, and so I've always thought that was kind of an honor. I mean, we obviously have a new pope who's from the Americas now. And but Pope John Paul visited St. Louis, and one of the great stories around that visit was that when he landed in Lambert Field, there was a limousine waiting for him, obviously to take him downtown. And as he jumped into the limousine, the driver of the limousine was kind of proceeding pretty slowly outside the airport. And the Pope asked the driver to stop. He said, "Please stop, get out. Get in the back, let me drive." So he did. And so the Pope John Paul took off for downtown St. Louis, and unfortunately he was speeding along the way, and one of St. Louis's finest stopped him and came up to him, and you know, the Pope rolled down his window, and my goodness, the officer was shocked, obviously. Didn't know what to think, and he says, Pope John Paul, please, he says, just wait right here, I'll be right back. He ran back to the squad car and he called the captain. He goes, "Captain," he goes, "I've stopped somebody really important." And he goes, "I'm not sure exactly what to do here." And so the captain on the other end of the call said, "Officer McCulloch," he says, "please tell me," he says, "that you didn't stop one of the city councilmen." He goes, "No, sir." He goes, "I think this guy's more important than a city councilman." And he goes, "McCulloch," he says, "please tell me you didn't stop the mayor." He goes, "No, sir, no." He goes, "I think this guy's more important than the mayor." The captain kind of swallowed hard and he said, "Man, don't tell me you pulled over the governor." He goes, "No, sir." He goes, "I think this guy's more important than the governor." He goes, "Well, who on earth is he?" He says, "I don't know, but he says the Pope is his chauffeur." Well, I grew up in a really, I grew up in maybe a more serious tone now. I grew up in a really great home. I really mean that. My mom and dad were really faith-based, strong faith-based people. And you know, back in that time, back in the 60s and what have you, one measure of your Christianity was how often you went to church. And so anyway, we went to church like every time the door was open. Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday, any special events. I mean, we were there all the time. Sunday school class, all those sorts of things. And so, and I'm really grateful for that. I'm not making fun of that. I'm grateful for that in many ways, even though I wanted to stay home and watch Lassie and Disney, we couldn't do that. You know, we had to go to church on Sunday night. And so, but I am grateful for all of that. But I'll say this, and that is, it didn't take. All that stuff didn't take for me. And so I think I'm kind of living proof that you can kind of go to church your whole life. You can go to Sunday school class, be involved with your church, and not really have any relevant personal relationship with the God of heaven. Shame on me. You know, I'm grateful now for all, looking back on all of that, but I lived a double life. And I don't know if you've ever done that. I don't know if any of you do that. But I lived a double life. I was one way around my mom and dad, totally a goody two-shoes. And I was totally a different way around my friends in high school and college. My language was different. My attitude was different. I absolutely was schizophrenic in many ways, living one way in front of people and living another way when I was with other people. And I lived that double life up until about the time I was a sophomore in college. And then something happened. I ran into a guy that shared a story with me about his life and how his life had changed. And it was a good friend of mine. He was a guy that I had grown up with, and so hadn't been in contact with for years. But anyway, it changed me. And all of a sudden, kind of that double life of mine started coming to an end. So I became a follower of Jesus in March of 1972. At Missouri Science and Technology in Rolla, where I went to school. And if anything of that, it set me on a journey that is, and in the years and months ahead, I had no idea what that journey looked like or what it was going to do to me as we went along. And you know what? I'm still on the journey. There's lots of changes that are still even happening today. But one of the changes over the years was kind of my perspective of ownership. And I want to talk to you a little bit about ownership. You know, over the years, I've had an opportunity to accumulate a whole lot of stuff. You know, cars, houses, savings accounts, good jobs, stuff. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with this stuff at all. Stuff is nice to have. People ask me about you know, having my own company and those sorts of things. And I can just tell you, finances makes your life kind of convenient, but it doesn't really make you happy. And so anyway, we've accumulated all this stuff, and I started to question: was I the real owner of all this stuff? Or was it God's? And perhaps God had maybe just entrusted to me these things, whatever it may have been. Maybe he's just entrusted me to kind of oversee and manage a little bit. And so to maybe teach me about himself and his principles and his character. So I started looking at that, and I said, you know what, there's a little difference here between kind of owning something and managing something, and kind of being a steward over it and being a manager of it, I mean, being an owner of it. Well, it stuck with me throughout my personal life, through the life of McCown Gordon. It really did start making a difference in how I looked at what I was doing. So about 30 years ago, Beth and I took a class called Crown Ministries. Maybe some of you have had the chance to take that class. And if you're not, look into it. It's being offered around the city, I'm sure, by many different church organizations. But we had the chance to take this class, and this class was a little bit of a transformational class for me. It added to my thoughts about ownership and management and all of that, but it also brought in kind of a new perspective on finances. And one of those things was just simply this. It reinforced the idea that I'm a manager. It's not mine. Anything that I have isn't mine. I've been entrusted to manage over it. But it also started talking to me about how we were going to live going forward. So most of us, I think, and this was true for Beth and I, most of us, I think in this way, and that is when we receive a paycheck, our priorities are this. We're going to spend the money, and if we have anything left over, we're going to try to save some. And if we have anything left over after we've spent and saved, we'll give some away. And Crown Ministries brought about a teaching that reversed that. It said maybe we ought to start thinking about, let's give first, let's save, and after we have given, after we have saved, then we can spend. That may sound simplistic, but let me tell you, in my life, it was transformational. I was like, are you kidding me? Who does that? But I felt like it was God's direction in my life and in our lives, that we were going to give first, we were going to save, and then spend. So anyway, we did that. And we started teaching our kids and about the principles of living generously, and it was very good. And we set up a foundation actually along the way. And the reason we did that was really just to start teaching our children about how to live generously. And there's some really great things that happened out of that that I won't go into right now. But anyway, it really did change our perspectives. And we didn't realize that by adhering to those principles of giving, saving, and spending, that it started opening up other opportunities for us, other opportunities to be involved in businesses and what have you. And probably the biggest opportunity that opened up to us was McCown Gordon. And that's the construction company that we have here in town. So, you know, I don't think that it would have been possible, I really don't, unless we had been kind of following that path of let's give, let's save, and let's spend. So we minimized debt, we increased our savings, we paid off our house, we tried to live within our means or even below our means, and live as much as possible debt-free lives. And we live less stressful lives, I can tell you that, much less stressful lives by living under those principles. And we were able to do things that I didn't think would ever be possible to do. Well, in 1999, Brett Gordon and I got together and we formed McCown Gordon. And I believe it was the result of following those principles in part. I believe it was also a result of God's grace and actually his leading. And so in the past 14 years, McCown Gordon, I don't want to sound like I'm bragging here, but McCown Gordon has grown to be one of the largest construction companies now in the region. And many people have come up to me and said, so how does that happen? I mean, how does a company go from being zero in 1999 to now being one of the larger construction companies in the region? And I think there's a lot of things you can say around that. You know, we've hired smart people. We really have. And to my colleagues out there, I'm honored to be working with you. You know, I think being the best places to work, we've tried to treat people right, if you will, at our company, and people have worked longer hours than I could have ever even asked them to work at the company. But you know what? There's a lot of companies in town that have smart, hardworking people in them. And at the end of the day, I believe more than anything that the reason for McCown-Gordon's success is really this, and that is God's grace and blessing on our company. I'm not that smart, guys, to, and I can tell you Brett's not. We're not that smart of fellas to take this company and do this. It's because of God's grace and blessing upon our company. When we started the company, we started it with three core values. And I think it's important. I'm not going to elaborate a lot on these, but those are integrity, performance, and relationships. Those are the things that form the foundation of our firm. And it wasn't profit-minded. It was mission-minded and values-driven kind of a company. And today, we still hope to do that. We still hope to be that every day. And so hopefully it tells you not just something about how we're going to deliver our services if we have a chance to work, but perhaps more important, who we are as a people of McCown-Gordon. And so it started the company in 1999. It's taken off since then. After forming these values, one of the things that we said that we wanted to do was to start giving back to the community. And so we established a guideline, said, you know what, we'd really like to give back 10% of our profits back into the community at any given point in time. And so I'll tell you a little bit more about that here in just a second. But when we sat down and we started the company, Brett and I put together this business plan. Are there some bankers in the room? There probably are, right? So this is a word of caution to all of you bankers. So we put together this business plan, and we took the business plan into our bank, and we said, hey, we're wanting to start this construction company, and here's our business plan. And amazingly, the bank looked at it and said, boy, okay, well, we can do that. We'll support you on this. Absolutely. This looks like a really good, solid business plan. So we took the business plan and off we went. Little did we realize that following this business plan was going to result in something. And so I get a call one day from a Entrepreneur magazine out in San Diego, and they said, hey, listen, would you give us some information about Pat and Brett and some other things? And they said, because we really want to, we really believe that maybe you're one of the faster growing firms in America. I said, yeah, right, okay. I said, where's the hook here? I mean, surely you're gonna sell me advertising or something. And they said, no. They said, could you just give us some information? So we did that, a little bit of information. They called back about 2 or 3 weeks later and they said, could you give us a little more information? Well, we did that. Well, then in June of 2001, Entrepreneur Magazine lands on our desk, and we're the fastest growing construction company in America. I want to tell my banker friends that, because if someone would have said, hey, with this business plan, if you guys do this, you're going to be the second fastest growing business in America and the fastest growing construction company in America. I'm like, no, I mean, you had thrown us out. We wouldn't have believed it. But it came about, and we were amazed, actually, at that, and just, again, thankful. We felt like it was really, in many ways, just such a blessing from God for that. Well, we wanted a strategy that was both benevolent in giving this 10%, and so we established the 10%. And you know, again, I think by God's grace, by God's blessing, we've been able to go above and beyond that. And so I think for the last 7 years we've been averaging around 15%, maybe to have more, and it keeps on ratcheting up to do that. And so some of that, like I said, is kind of strategic. We want to give back to the community in a very thoughtful way. Some of it is just we believe that there's a common good that happens by doing that. There was a conference put on town about 3 weeks ago by a church here in town called the Common Good Conference. And maybe some of you had a chance to go to it. I had a chance to go. It was a good conference. And it was really all about this, and that was the church has a role in the welfare of the city. And so it takes me back to a passage in the Bible out of Jeremiah 29. It says, pray for the welfare of the city that you are in, for in its welfare you will find your welfare. So we believe that there's a common good that happens by not just simply investing in faith-based organizations. That's important. But beyond faith-based organizations, we believe there's a real good to the city that we can do by putting forth those dollars. And it's not just simply stroking a check. That's fairly easy to do. But perhaps more important than that is giving of our time and giving of what wisdom maybe God has given us to share with others in the community. And so we try to do that. We have a chance to shape and mold, if you will, the culture of a city by being involved. By being involved financially, by being involved personally with those, by sharing whatever work and wisdom, wealth that we have with those organizations. And we believe it's transformational to a community by being there. So one of the things, and I'll conclude here in just a second, one of the things that we had the chance to do a few years ago, when the economy turned down in 2008, we were looking for an opportunity to do something different with our finances at McCown Gordon. And so it's great. I think everybody loves getting little, you know, presents from companies, and that happens pretty often in our industry. They call them bribes, but no, just kidding. Anyway, but it does really happen in our, I mean, so, you know, we were just going, you know, just giving gifts and what have you, and sending steaks or peanuts or whatever the case might be. And we sat down one day and we just said, you know, what is something that we could do that could maybe have a real impact and a real difference in our community? And so we decided that we would actually give a gift card to all of our clients and architectural friends, developers, that would allow them to take that gift card and donate it to any 501c3 organization. So not only were we able to maybe give to kind of indirectly or vicariously through them, it encouraged them to give as well. And we were hoping that that there would be generosity kind of learned through that event. And it had a big impact. It had a really big impact on the community. Well, you know, those gifts are important, but I want to tell you a little story about a guy one day that was walking along a stream out in the woods, and as he walked along, there was this frog, and this frog kind of spoke up and said, "Hey, mister." Hey, he goes, "If you pick me up and kiss me, I'll turn into a lovely, lovely princess." And so the older gentleman looked down at the frog and picked him up and popped him in his pocket, and off he went strolling along by the stream again. And finally this frog spoke up and he said, "Hey, old man," he says, "I told you, if you kiss me, I'll turn into a lovely princess." The old man said, "You know," he goes, "I heard you." He goes, "I think I'd rather have a talking frog than a lovely princess." You know? And as good as that talking frog gift might be, you know, there's a lot better gift out there. And it's really this. And that's God's love. If it's great being a father, It's great being a grandfather. A lot of fathers in the room. And I can tell you, if we could take all of the care and love and feelings that you have for your kids and for your grandkids, if we could take all of that together and put it up here on the stage, it wouldn't even come close to the love that our Father has for you. Not even close. He adores you. He loves you more than you will ever know. And you know what? He wants to be your father. He really does. John 1, 12 says this: all that receive him and believe on him, to them he's given the power or the right to become the children of God and thus our Father. That, my friend, is truly the greatest gift of all. Thank you. God bless.
Thank you very much. As usual, for our benediction, we'll have the Lord's Prayer. We're privileged to have Carrie Mock return this year. Carrie is a singer, actor, instructor, director, and a pianist. Robert Trussell in the Kansas City Star last year said, "Carrie Mock is a fine singer and smooth pianist." After the benediction, will you please remain silent and depart silently from this breakfast. Thank you all for coming.
But deliver us from evil.